Welcome to a recording of Titusville Free Methodist Church, a community planted in the forgiveness, freedom, and fullness of Jesus Christ. We thank you for your interest and pray that you are blessed as you listen to this relevant word.
Well, so last summer, a little over 50 of us from our congregation went to Buffalo, New York for 8 Days of Hope Buffalo. Like some of you who are around then, you remember us talking a lot about that. And that really was a pretty awesome trip. You know, I guess I'll just say here, so we are looking at doing that again this summer. They're doing another 8 days in Buffalo, and we got the dates for those, so we're looking at that kind of stuff. And also some good thoughts for our Sent Saturday event that we do here in Titus. So I'll be getting in touch with some of the folks who went on 8 days of Hope and talking through some of that. But this 8 days of Hope trip, it really was great. It's a great organization. They do some really great work with disaster relief in Buffalo. They're mostly dealing with the poverty that existed in Buffalo. And so we were pretty excited to be a part of what they did. And they have some people who are like formal employees of 8 Days of Hope. And they have some people like us who are just Joe Schmo volunteer who signed up to come help for a little bit. And they have these other people who are like full-time missionaries. They're not employees, but they come and they do all the events. And they're kind of part of the inner circle. And they participate in the 8 Days of Hope events. And so David Finley actually got curious, how does that work? Like, how do you become a full-time missionary of 8 Days of Hope? And so he did some looking into it. And what he found out was, so he came and talked to Pastor Tim and I at one point. And so 8 Days of Hope, the organization, only requires an incredibly small amount from that person's home church, like $200 a month. Like, it's obvious that's not how this person's, like, needs are cared for, right? While they're on the road and they're in between trips, like, $200 a month isn't, like, it's barely buying them shampoo every month, right? The way things cost anymore. Okay, maybe it does a little better than that. But it's not caring for all the things they might need. And so so how does everything else get cared for? And you might think that, like, our assumption was that, like, any missionary, so in between stuff, you would go to churches and raise support and do those kinds of things. And they allow for that. Like, you can do that. But what David was told was that most of the people who serve as full-time missionaries are people who have retired, some who have even retired early, and did very well saving their money and did very well with retirement plans. And so they don't need to worry about it while they're on the road with 8 Days of Hope. Like, isn't that pretty cool? Like, these people just did so well with their money that when God said, hey, I want you to do this, like, money didn't even need to occur to them about it because they knew they were taken care of. Like, that's a really cool thing. Like, I would love that to be true for me, that when God said, hey, I want you to go and do, I could just go and do, and I didn't need to check my bank account, I didn't need to check my wallet, I just could. But for a lot of us, we can't do that because if our refrigerator dies tomorrow, we're not sure how we're going to get a new refrigerator. If our car breaks down, we might have to start walking everywhere. Like, we're one unexpected major purchase away from just being sunk. Like, that's the reality for a lot of us. We're living paycheck to paycheck, and we're like one breath away from a real financial crisis. Money's our master. So over the course of this month, we've been talking about how we can get ourselves out of that predicament. And we've been looking at passages from the New Testament. And we've actually been looking at some principles that John Wesley laid out. And that's earn all you can, save all you can, and give all you can. And the idea is that if we hold these three principles together, not neglecting one, and we'll say a lot about that next week, but if we hold those three together, then we can actually come out on the other side of kind of money's control and oppression of us. Because I want to be free of this. Like, I want to be free of money being a deciding factor. Like, when an emergency happens, I don't want money to determine how I handle that emergency. When God wants me to do something really cool and really great, I don't want to be like, no, I can't. I don't have the money this time, God, sorry. I don't want that to be me. So this morning, we're going to dive in and we're going to talk a little bit about saving. So why don't we pray and then we'll get after it. Father, money is a hard topic for us because we have roots in money. And by roots, I mean the way we were raised, the way our parents handled money, the way we see our friends and other family members handle money. All of that influences us, and all of that affects us. And so, even when we're doing our worst, sometimes we don't want to be challenged. So Jesus, we open our hearts and our minds this morning to you, for you to challenge us. In your name we pray, amen. So in the new year, we've been talking about devoting ourselves to the apostles' teaching, which is the New Testament. And so, you know, so we're talking about saving this morning, so you might think, okay, so let's look through the New Testament and see if we got some passages on savings, like maybe there's some instructions, you know, put this much away for this and those kinds of stuff. But aside from a couple little instances, like there's not a lot about saving money. And we'll get to some of those instances later on. But there's not a lot about saving, because there's actually a secret to saving money. There's a secret to saving money, and the Bible does have something to say about this. The secret to saving money is in how you spend it. That's the first blank on your insert. The secret to saving money is in how you spend it. Our problem isn't actually transferring the money to our savings account. It's what happens to it before it can even get there. Like sometimes it's gone before we could even give a thought to putting it in savings. So I got a couple verses from Proverbs here. So Sarah, do you mind throwing the first one up there? This is Proverbs 21:17. Those who love pleasure become poor. Those who love wine and luxury will never be rich. Then go to 20. The wise have wealth and luxury, but fools spend whatever they get. We see this a lot in our culture, don't we? Like our culture, our world today, we just get what we want. And whether that means we use the last dollar that's in our bank account and leave just enough in there that the bank doesn't get angry at us, or whether that means we put it on a credit card and we're like, well, I can just make the minimum payments till I get caught up. Like sometimes we just get what we want no matter what the cost is in the end. And once we start on that path, once we start heading that way, it's really hard to get off of it because we get ingrained into it. There's a great quote from John Wesley that's actually on the back of your insert. So if you got your insert, go ahead and grab it and flip it over. Part of what makes it great is just the language of the day that he uses. Who would expend anything in gratifying these desires? That's like our worldly, fleshly desires that we would spend money on. This is actually from his thoughts on saving. Who would expend anything in gratifying these desires if he considered that to gratify them is to increase them? Nothing could be more certain than this. Daily experience shows the more they are indulged, they increase the more. Whenever, therefore, you expend anything to please your taste or other senses, you pay so much for sensuality. When you lay out money to please your eye, you give so much for an increase of curiosity, for a stronger attachment to these pleasures which perish in the using. While you are purchasing anything which men use to applaud, you are purchasing more vanity. Had you not then enough of vanity, sensuality, curiosity before? Was there need of anything? And would you pay for it too? What manner of wisdom is this? Would not the literally throwing your money into the sea be a less mischievous folly? Oof. Oof. Like, don't go to Sheets today at your church. Just throw your money straight in Oil Creek. It might be a better use of it. Oof. That's a little bit hard, right? So you know what? The more we give in to those desires, the more it grows. Because this goes back to what we said in that first week. Money is our master, and it has a way of getting its grip on us and not letting go. And so in order for us to kind of step away from this and get a handle on our spending and understanding money properly, we've got to change our mindset a little bit. We've got to realign our thinking. And we've got to realign our thinking from it's my money to it's God's money. I mean, yeah, you earned it. Yeah, you worked hard for it. But it's only through God's grace that you were even able to. Like, our understanding as a Christian has to be every good thing is a gift from God. I didn't do anything to warrant it. I didn't do anything to deserve it. It's all straight from God's hand. So the Bible uses this word that we actually don't hear very often anymore, and that word is steward. So for our purposes this morning, the definition of the word steward is someone who is in possession of and takes care of what belongs to God. Someone who is in possession of and takes care of what belongs to God. The financial means that we have, whether it's large or small, it's a blessing. It's a blessing God has given us. And it belongs to Him. I'm in possession of it. I'm holding on to it. But it's His. He allows me to have it. And so I need to steward God's money well. I need to take care of it. So it matters how we spend it. Now, you know what? Let's talk about how we spend it a little bit. Because some of you, you know, so anytime this would come up, like the position I've been in before, I'm like, well, you know what? I don't really overspend, or I don't really spend my money frivolously. So let's talk a little bit about how we spend our money. And let's just get this first one out of the way. So the you on your insert and how you spend money is unnecessary expenses. So let's just be real upfront and open. We all have unnecessary expenses. You know it, I know it, and we all know we need to cut back. Like, that's just, it is what it is, and we know it. Sometimes we go out and we buy something new just for the sake of getting something new, or we stop and eat out or get something on a trip, and like, you know, we eat out. Again, we stop at Sheetz, like the little touchscreen just kind of draws us in as we're driving by. We spend money when we don't need to. It's unnecessary expenses, and we know we should cut back. So then there's these necessary expenses, and that's your end. So you've got your rent, or you've got your mortgage, you've got your electric bill, you've got to put gas in your car, you've got to buy groceries. Like, all these are necessary expenses. You have to pay them. There's no getting around them. And actually, by paying those necessary expenses, you are being a good steward of what God has given you. Like, you can't cut those short, because those kinds of expenses, your necessary expenses, help you care for the other blessings God has given you to steward. So everything from your home to your own family, these necessary expenses help you care for those other blessings. But you actually do have a little bit of control over them. And I don't mean control over whether you pay them. I mean, we actually have control over the amount. So think about your electric bill. Like, your electric bill, surprise, is based on how much electric you use. Now, you know what? I'm not advocating that we all walk around in the dark. Like, don't turn your lights on for the next week and see how it goes. Like, I'm not saying that. But maybe we could shut some things off when we leave a room and we're not using them. Lights, fans, TVs, so on and so forth. And we always say, well, it's not using that much. It's not going to make much of a difference. Over a longer period of time, it actually could make a difference. Or how about this? How about groceries? So this is something that I think Katie and I are guilty of. So we very rarely go to the grocery store with any sort of idea of what we want to eat in the next week. Are any of you like real like menu planners, and you get really into like, I know what I'm going to have for dinner? Good job, Cheryl. Yeah. So we don't. We walk into the grocery store and we just buy some stuff, and then we figure out what we're going to eat in the next week. It's a little bit crazy, right? Like so Kurt's in the back. It's like if Kurt went to Home Depot, bought a bunch of wooden nails and stuff, and said, I'll figure out what I'm going to build later. Like, just a little silly. Like, no one would do that in any other thing, but we do it all the time with our groceries. You know, I know. Sorry, Cheryl. But I look at some of those people who menu plan, and I'm like, them people crazy. Like, like, what are you doing? Like, I don't have time for that. But maybe I don't have the money to do otherwise. All I'm saying is a little bit of planning and being a little bit careful. Some of our necessary expenses can actually become smaller numbers. It's going to take a little bit of work, and it's going to maybe make us do some things that we don't really want to do. But we can actually bring those numbers down. All right, so we've got our unnecessary expenses. We've got our necessary expenses. So let's talk about our avoidable expenses. So these are expenses that we kind of wander into. They look like necessary expenses, and maybe sometimes they are, but they just get a little bit tweaked. So this isn't on your insert, but maybe you should write it down. Just because you're financially capable of doing something doesn't mean you should. Just because you're financially capable of something doesn't mean you should. Like if you're dropping an extra $100 every month into your housing, whether it's rent or mortgage because you've gotten a place that's more than what you need, or whether your bills are higher because you leave the heat up when you leave the house or any of those kind of things. If you're dropping an extra $100 a month into that, that might be why you don't know what you're going to do when your washing machine dies. That might be why you don't have money to do something that you really need to and really want to do. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do when God gives that little tug at your heart to go to like the Encounter God retreat? I'll say something about that later. What are you going to do if God gives that little tug and says, hey, I want you to help this person out? Sorry, God, I left my heat up all this month. See, we often fall into the series of lies that we tell ourselves. Like, oh, it's no big deal, or I don't need to worry about it. Or we always do this thing, right, where we say, wow, I really want that. And all of a sudden, the more we think about what we really want, we think about how what we want is what we deserve. And what we deserve becomes what we need. And we just fall into this trap. So I believe, like I fully believe, that everything we need, truly need, God has already provided for us. Everything we need. He's put it in your hand. Now that might mean you need to reassess what you think you need, but I think it's already there. So here's an example. So my least favorite month of the calendar year, does anyone want to guess what my least favorite month of the calendar year is? It's all right, you're going to be wrong. It's car inspection month. That is my least favorite month when I know, you know, this is bad. I don't even remember what my car inspection, I think it's May. This is why it's a bad thing. I hate car inspection month because I never take my car in for car inspection and go, oh, I wonder if it'll pass this time, because I just know it's not gonna. And I just know that I'm gonna need to pay something, and it's not gonna be a little bit of something. There was one time in my whole life that my car passed inspection. And when I went in and said, oh, it passed this time, so it's whatever, you know, $70, $50, whatever it is. I was like, it can do that? It can just pass. Are you sure it doesn't need a rotor or something that I don't understand? Are you sure something doesn't need done in there? No, it passed. Like, I'm always assuming I'm going to put a chunk of change into my car inspection. So one time, my car inspection was pretty high. And, like, you know, so high enough, not high enough to actually say the car's toast and you need to go get a new car, but high enough that it hurt, and it hurt real bad. And I was thinking, man, car inspection wasn't in May back then. I was thinking, man, I wish my car inspection fell the same time I got my tax return. Like, if my car inspection fell the same time I got my tax return, I wouldn't even be worrying about this. I could just pay for my car inspection and move on. Now, where do you think my tax return went? I spent it. I just spent it on random stuff. Shortly after I got my tax return, I spent it as if it was going to expire and the government was going to take it back. Like, I treated my tax return like the president called me up and said, here's a little gift, get yourself something nice. And so I did. I upgraded my laptop when it didn't need upgraded. I just bought a bunch of little things, and it was gone. It was gone without me even really thinking about it, without me giving any thought or any planning to it. And all of a sudden, while I was buying all those little things or upgrading all those things that didn't really need upgraded, I was never thinking about a few months later when I was going to be like, what am I going to do about my car? The solution had been in my bank account just a couple months before, but I had let it go. So once I had this great thought and I realized I could actually save my tax return. So I put it in the bank, saved it for car inspection. The car inspection didn't take all of it, so there's still some there. And you know how when money hits your hand for the first time? Like, you've heard of like itchy palms and stuff, right? Like, money hits our hand and we're just like, oh, what can I use this for? Well, it didn't just hit my hand. It'd been there for a little bit now. So I paid for my car inspection, and I had money left over. I no longer had that itchy palm to spend it. So it stayed. It just stayed in my savings account. It didn't wander off. The government didn't ask for it back. Nothing. It just stayed there. And the next year, and the next year. It's funny how that happens. Like, I believe God has given us everything. Everything we need for this day and the next. But you know what? Like, I get it. So this is hard, right? And this is not how we see everyone else living. This is not how, certainly not how we see advertisements, television, internet ads, the whole deal. It's not how we see those things encouraging us to live. It's not how we see our friends living. It's not how we see our neighbors living. It's not how we see other family members living. And so we just have this desire, like, I don't want to worry about this. Like, I just want to enjoy life. I want to live a good life. So Jesus had some thoughts on maybe what the good life actually looked at. Sarah, do you got Luke 9? So this is Jesus' thoughts on how to keep your life and live a good life. If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life, whoever wants to live the good life, whoever wants to get the most out of life by the world's standards, will lose it. But whoever loses his life for me will save it. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world? What good is it for us to gain all this stuff and yet lose or forfeit his very self? It's the secret to living the good life, because it's actually the secret to living the Christian life. We've got to be willing to tell ourselves no. You know, so some of us have a hard time saying no to other people, but all of us, if we're being honest, the hardest person to say no to is ourselves. Sometimes we just got to say no. We don't want to give in to our pulses. In this case, we're talking about impulse spending, but Jesus is talking about our sinful desires, the things we want, the things that might hurt other people. We just got to say no. Because when we don't, those impulses, money, begins to gain more and more control over us. You know, if it feels like the bills just keep coming and you never have enough, if it feels like if a major appliance breaks, your whole life's going to fall apart, then you might have an actual problem with spending. Now, you know, hear me out. Like, I'm not saying you never, you know, do something nice for yourself or your family. I'm not saying you never go out to eat again. I'm saying let's start doing it on purpose. Let's start thinking about it rather than just money slipping through our hands. Like, aren't you sick and tired of getting nickel and dime to the poorhouse? Because that's how it happens. Like, stories that we so often hear about, well, I just don't have any money because my car broke down. It's true. I don't have any money because my refrigerator broke. It's true. But what about what happened before that? So here's a place to start. This is one of your next steps, actually. Track your expenses. So mine and Lucas's small group this time is doing a financial group, and we were so confident in our ability to lead that, we asked someone else to do it. So Bill Dale is leading our group, and he has us tracking our expenses right now. So every cent that we spend on anything, we write down. So we write down how much we spent and what we spent it on. And you know what? You have no idea how much money you let just slip through your hands until you actually see where it all went. Dave Ramsey, he's a financial guru and also a Christian. He has this famous statement where he says, give every dollar a name. Give every dollar a name. Okay, so he's not saying, oh, this one's George and this one's Big Abe. What he is saying is give an account for every dollar you have. So cattle farmers. So cattle farmers who are going to raise their cattle for beef, like they don't name their cows, do they? No. They don't have Bessie and Big Al or whatever. They just have cows. And the reason why they just have cows is because if they named them, it would be harder to kill them, which is the goal of what they're trying to do. When we name our money, we make an account for our money, it becomes a lot harder to spend it. Not because of some emotional attachment, because we know the actual value of that dollar, and we see the actual difference that it can make. You start to spend a little bit less on those unnecessary expenses. You're like, oh, you know, I probably don't need to stop and pick up something on the way to work today. I'll be okay, or I can pack my lunch and bring it. We spend less on the unnecessary expenses and the avoidable expenses. And then, when you get to your next paycheck, you realize, huh, I still got money left over. And then the next one, and the next one, and the next one. And all of a sudden, you actually have some money to put into savings. Not because you worked really hard at savings, but because you paid attention to how you were spending your money. And then things just grow from there. So some of you might be thinking that Jesus does offer a warning about savings. And we're actually going to talk about that next week, because honestly, I think for many of us are in a position where to warn us about savings would be like telling someone there's a cliff up ahead and they're still 200 miles away from it. Like most of us are so far away from hitting that place where we need a warning that it can wait. It can wait till next week at least. So we'll get to some of that next week. But so there's a number of us who are in this position where, you know, we're overspending and we don't have a lot on savings. And there's some of us in this room, I would hope and I would guess, who are actually doing pretty well. You know, the bank account's healthy. We don't need to worry about things. We've done really good building retirement plans, building savings accounts, and so on. And then there's some of us that are just doing fine. Like, none of it's on purpose, but we're doing fine. The bills are paid. All of our needs are met. Some of our wants are met, too. We got a little bit of money in savings. Not a lot, but it's something. And we're doing fine. And so we hear something like this, and we're like, I'm doing fine. Like, that's where I would say where I've been. Just doing fine. So Jesus tells a story about a master and three servants. And the master's going away for a bit, so he gives each of the three servants some money to take care of, some money to steward for him while he's gone. So one guy, he gets a bunch. The next guy gets like an average amount. And the third guy, he only gets a little bit. And the first two guys, they work really, really hard. And they end up doubling their money. And so when the master comes back and sees how well they've done with his money, he says, man, you guys did so well. Well done, good and faithful servants. Let me give you more. And then he comes to the guy who only got a little. And the guy who only got a little, he did fine. Like, he didn't make any extra money, But he also didn't lose any. Like most of us, if someone gave us some money, we would spend it and lose some. That's not what he did. He held on to it and held the status quo. He did fine. So when the master came to him, the master said, "Well, you did fine." I wish that's what the master said. That's not what he said. Called him lazy. Master called him wicked. He did fine. And right? He didn't lose anything. Wicked and lazy were the two words the master had for him. We were recently at a speaking event where an author was talking about this passage, and he notes that the only context Jesus gives for these servants being good and faithful is the fact that they multiplied what God had given them, what the master had given them. They took what the master had given them and multiplied it. Some of us are doing just fine. You're doing good. But what if God wanted you to do great? And what if God put great into your hands every month and you frittered great away to settle for good? Man, I don't want that to be me. I look at the stories of those people who are serving with 8 Days of Hope who did well with their money, like not well with their money in the last 5 years they were working, but for decades they did well with their money. And when God came calling, they said, yeah, pick me. I want to be that. And I get it. Nothing in our world looks like that. You know, one of the other great Dave Ramsey quotes is, "We live like no one else today so we can live like no one else tomorrow." And when I hear that, I'm not thinking I'm going to drive crummy cars today so I can drive sports cars tomorrow. Like, I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking, man, I'm living like no one else today so that tomorrow, when God asks something of me, I can say yes. Tomorrow, when my refrigerator dies, I can replace it and still say yes to God. I want financial freedom so that when Jesus is looking out for a good and faithful servant, I could say, "Here I am." And he can say, "Yeah, you. So let's be good stewards. Let's steward our money like it belongs to someone else. Because it does.
Thank you for listening. We invite you to visit our website at t3church.org to listen to our regular podcast and find out more about all that is T3 Church.